Almost 10 years ago, my parents marked their 50th wedding anniversary. In March, they will celebrate 60 years together. At the first event on the 50th, all my siblings were present with their spouses and children. I counted in my head 23 grand and great-grandchildren at that first event. We'll see how many show up at this next one in March. There were lots of extended family and friends present. I had only been ordained a few months and had the privilege of officiating the renewal of their wedding vows. It was a real honor to be with them. Now, after the service, we had a party. We had a tiered wedding cake that was based on a picture from the original wedding. The caterers had filled the tables in the dining home with a huge feast of food. And while we didn't have 180 gallons of wine available, there was abundance. An abundance of joy, an abundance of love, an abundance of happiness. Now, I'm one of those clergy people who like to say that I would rather officiate a funeral any day other than a wedding. Now, it's not true, though, because I've never had that horrible wedding that is of legend. Now, I've been, I guess, officiating weddings for more than 10 years now, and I have to say that I've thoroughly enjoyed every single one of them. Even the one where the groomsman passed out and we had to lay him on a pew. The one at Chesapeake Bay where it was 103 degrees in the shade and we were completely drenched in sweat. No shade whatsoever. Because weddings are times of abundance and generosity. And we all get to experience that together. Today's gospel story is about the wedding at Cana. It takes place only a few days after Jesus has been baptized in the River Jordan and called his first disciples Andrew, Peter, James, and John. Cana was a small backwater village not far from Jesus' hometown of Nazareth and close to Capernaum where some of his disciples live. There's nothing actually special about Cana, except in this story it's a place of a family celebration. We don't know anything about the couple getting married, but we know they are obviously friends of Mary and Jesus who were invited to the celebration. Now, Jewish weddings then and today are rather lavish affairs. Family and friends travel from near and far, and at the time of Jesus, that meant doing most of that travel on foot. So the bride and groom's family, well, they were providing food and drink for 4 or 5 days of feasting. It was a time of hospitality, a time of generosity. Even if they only had a little to share, they gave everything they could. At some point in this story, during the festivities, Mary discovers that the host had run out of wine. And in a culture where, well, where hospitality is paramount, running out of food or wine is more than an embarrassing predicament for the host families. It would be a blight on the reputation of the bride and groom for years to come. Mary's concerned, like any good Jewish mother, right? And she goes and she finds Jesus and she tells him about the situation. Mary is beginning to recognize that Jesus has some power, some authority from God, and that he might be able to do something. Now, I don't know about you, but the first response that Jesus gives is a bit shocking. What concern of that is to me or to you? And even though Jesus appears to be uninterested, it's Mary's response that we have to focus on. She says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Because if no one else has faith in Jesus, his mother sure does. Seeing some stone jars, Jesus instructs the servants to fill them to the brim with water. Now, these are fairly large, rather enormous jars. They hold 20 to 30 gallons of water. And you notice that's all that Jesus does? He doesn't say, touch the jars. He doesn't say some long, drawn-out prayer over the water. He doesn't put his hand inside to touch the water. When the jars are filled, he simply instructs the servants to take some to the head steward. This is the first miracle in the Gospel of John, or as this author calls them, signs. It is not that Jesus simply turns water into wine in rather extravagant quantities. It's the best wine these guests have drunk so far. From John's viewpoint, this first sign reveals Jesus' glory, and his disciples begin to believe in him in a deeper, more meaningful way. Jesus is showing us a grace-filled response to what might have been a pretty awful situation. While every sign or miracle in the scriptures may be mined for, I think, layers and layers of meaning, well, I think it's obvious what this story is about. It's all about abundance and grace. In the opening prologue to John's gospel, we hear that Jesus is for the world the one who brings grace upon grace. Layers and layers of grace. More grace than we need, more grace than we can ever deserve. I think that abundance, well, at times it's just hard to recognize. Most of us have so much, and we waste so much, and sometimes we simply take it all for granted. Now, in the Hebrew scriptures, being blessed with material wealth was always seen as a sign of God's favor. And I think that's not a bad way to think about it, as long as we don't fall into the trap of thinking that those who don't have are somehow in God's disfavor. As long as the abundance that we have creates in us a spirit of gratitude and generosity, that it creates in us a heart that is bent towards others. It is unfortunate that sometimes people with abundance monopolize and hoard what they have, controlling, possessing, keeping it all, instead of living as Jesus does with a hospitable and generous spirit. A few days after the Epiphany, that was just two Sundays ago, there were lots of volunteers around the church helping us take down Christmas. If you remember, we had stuff everywhere. There were wreaths in the windows and bows and garlands and Christmas trees and things outside and inside and in the chapel. While we were doing that work together, I noticed that one of our fellow parishioners was here, and I thought it quite odd because I know that the demands on her job would not normally allow her to be here on a weekday. And so we were talking together, and she told me that she had been furloughed. I began to make a response about my frustrations with the partial government shutdown. She gently pushed back and said, "Buddy, there is enough blame to go around for everyone in Washington. Everyone shares the blame." Her response has haunted me. Sometimes we don't just get immune to abundance, we are blinded by it, corrupted by it, unable to see the need around us so that we lose our compassion for those who live just a few paychecks from poverty. The men and women we have elected to represent us who have an abundance of power and prestige, an abundance of wealth and natural resources at their disposal, have placed 800,000 of our fellow citizens, well, in pretty desperate situations. Instead of living out of abundance and generosity, they have become arrogant and petty and myopic. All of them, not one of them. They have failed to create for us a path so that our people, our citizens, can thrive. I know one parishioner. I have a cousin who's in the Coast Guard, and I have a neighbor who with a four-year-old child. All of them are trying to make ends meet, and it's hard. It's challenging. So I wonder today, who are your friends? Who are your family members? Who are your neighbors who are trying to make ends meet? Who are caught up in a season of lack of generosity? I know they will survive. I know Americans will rise to the occasion. You will rise to the occasion and take care of your family and friends and neighbors. We're seeing it happen all over the country with food banks and with parishes and churches of all denominations, of all religious faiths, giving and sharing. I have no answers for what the politicians need to do. It's above my pay grade. But I can tell you what I think the gospel imperative is concerning abundance. Jesus turns water into wine so that it can be shared with every wedding guest. Throughout John's gospel, Jesus acts with abundance of grace that always leads to restored relationships. Jesus heals a man who's sick for 38 years and gives him fullness of life. Jesus gives sight to a man born blind and restores him to wholeness and to his community. Jesus calls Lazarus stinking and dead from the tomb and gives him back to his sisters Mary and Martha. These signs are generous and abundant and life-giving. Abundance in God's kingdom isn't only about a one-on-one encounter with Jesus. It's not me and Jesus as much as we might like it to be. And sometimes I would like it to be that way because it would make life so much simpler. But the grace upon grace that John talks about, the grace upon grace that's poured out on us from Jesus, is always meant to be shared. And we can only share when we are in relationships with others. Those who have been rejected or abandoned or neglected or lost. Who are searching for community and acceptance and new life. One of the qualities I've come to love about Holy Innocence Church is your generosity. Not just your eagerness to share your material wealth, but your time and your talent. The way you volunteer with children and families, teaching and tutoring. The way you work through CAC and Family Promise to provide shelter for the homeless and the hungry. All the many venues throughout this church that allows us to be engaged with the world to share what we have received. This quality is born out of your being the object of God's abundant grace. The gospel imperative calls us to be ever vigilant, to be constant in looking for new ways to share God's love, new ways to seek out the neglected and the lost and the forgotten, to build a generous kingdom until Jesus returns. Now, there are no longer signs like turning water into wine. At least none that I'm aware of. But Jesus does come to us. Jesus continues to be with us in a sign of his abundant love for us. It happens right here at this table, week after week after week. We take a bit of bread, we take a little wine, and we prepare a feast. It may not look like a feast, but Jesus comes to us to overwhelm us with his grace. So as we come to this altar rail, we are like the stone jars at the wedding at Cana. Jesus fills us up to the brim, empowering us to go out to do the work that God calls us to do, to be bearers of Jesus' abundant life to the world. So come and taste the goodness of God. Amen.